This is Deborah Goins. She lived in Fort Scott for several years, and she would like to tell us her experience with Gordon Parks.
I was born in 1963 in Fort Scott. I am the youngest of a total of 8 children that my mother had, and being born in Fort Scott, I had the experience of learning about the project that he was doing in 1968, I think it was when he first, maybe 67 when he first came in, which was the learning tree filming. I was really young at that age, so of course I didn't really grasp what was happening. My recollection of it was that my family members were involved in the project as extras in the movie. And from what I was told, my oldest sister, who was 21 years older than me, was originally cast to be, is it Mabel, the prostitute? And she had accepted that role, and so there should be some posters out there with her image as the original cast member as Mabel. But then she became a devout religious Christian, and so by the time it was time to actually film, she had turned down the role because it was against her religious convictions to portray herself as a prostitute. So she ended up in the scenes in the extra, as an extra. There was a couple of scenes that she ended up being in that you can clearly identify her, and she was in the courtroom scene as one of the people that was at the trial. And then she was also clearly visible in the funeral scene at the very end. My other siblings, you can't really clearly identify them, but they all got paid and were all extras in the movie.
So, did you receive any sort of memorabilia from the filming? We were going through some of the artifacts that were at the foundation from the movie, and we saw Gordon Parks had written personal letters to some of the cast members and the crew. There was even a napkin that he signed. Did you receive any of that?
No, I did not. And as crazy as it may sound, I never actually saw the movie until I was an adult. We didn't have, you know, VHS back then. And so whenever the movie did show on TV, I would catch glimpses of it sometimes, but didn't realize that that was the movie that was I was seeing parts of, because I was just, you know, changing the channels. And it wasn't until after I was an adult and actually actively tried to find the film so I could watch it on VHS that I realized I'd seen parts of the movie. And I did not actually ever meet Gordon Parks, but I knew that he was around because he stayed when he was in town with our neighbor.
Was his presence very known in the community when he would be in Fort Scott?
Being as young as I was, I believe that it was very well known, and I know that from the movie, The Learning Tree, I recognized a lot of the community there as people I knew in the community. So yeah, I would say his presence was very well known, but I was just so young at the time that I wasn't around him at the time that that was really going on.
We've also learned that there was seemingly some resistance about Gordon coming to Fort Scott and filming The Learning Tree. Obviously, you said you were pretty young, but can you recall any of the tension that was maybe surrounding that?
No, because, like I said, he stayed and actually slept over at my next-door neighbor's house whenever he was in town. So my recollection of it was that he was welcomed because our neighbors, you know, welcomed him in their home, and I never heard of anything negative.
What about after the release of the movie, after everyone has seen it, what was the town's reaction?
I don't recall there being a premiere in Fort Scott for the movie. Have you found out if there was a premiere actually in Fort Scott? Because I don't recall one.
I don't think there was a premiere actually in the town.
Yeah, I didn't recall that. So I don't remember it being a big deal when I was that young. I just remember the stories of my family saying that they were in the movie and always knowing that it was an important movie, not just for our family, but for the town of Fort Scott.
So, having seen it for the first real time as an adult, how was that, like, as your hometown and seeing it, and obviously the subject matter is pretty heavy and...
It really made me feel like he captured the community really well. The scenes that they had of, you know, swimming in the lake and the river were very realistic. There were scenes that were filmed at Gun Park with the ducks, and it really reminded me of my childhood in Fort Scott. So even though he, you know, when he wrote the book said that it was fiction, it really, you know, it wasn't until later that he admitted that it was semi-autobiographical, but to me it really captured the community that I remember growing up in. I remember knowing that there were some white people that were prejudiced, but I also remember very clearly that my mother's attitude was similar to his mother's attitude about people being people, and there's good people that are white, and there's bad people that are white, there's good people that are black, and there's bad people that are black. So I really was raised in that same kind of an environment, that kind of attitude, where I recognized that there were some people in the community that were prejudiced, but I wasn't raised to think about people in terms of their color.
Would you say there was a lot of prejudiced people around the time that you lived there?
I didn't feel that way, no. I did not. I had one neighbor that wouldn't allow us to walk on the sidewalk in front of his house. But for the most part, everyone was very nice to us. We had people in the community that, you know, we felt were like family to us that were white. And the overall feeling was that, you know, if you were a good person, you would be treated fairly.
Was there a lot of segregation?
Not when I was raised. I know my older siblings would have experienced school segregation, but when I was raised in Fort Scott, my experience was, even in pre-K, you know, like Head Start and Jack and Jill, there were totally integrated schools. So I knew there was one school that they said was the white school, but to me, I interpreted it to mean that those kids went to a private school because their parents had enough money that they weren't in public school.
Do you want to go inside?
It's a little cold.
He's a little cold.
But it's okay. I don't mind. I mean,
are
I know
sure?
I'm shaking, but it's okay.
I don't mind. Are you sure?
If you change your mind, just please let us know.
Okay. Yeah, I think the noise level in there is too much, though.
So you're mixed?
Yes.
What was that experience like in Fort Scott, being mixed?
I didn't even know I was mixed until after I moved out of Fort Scott, which is funny because my actual father, he would come around all the time, and, you know, I didn't know that he was even my actual father. I thought he was more like an uncle, you know, my mother's really, really, really good friend. And the funny thing is I have a brother that looks very white, but I didn't even realize that he was mixed because we just accepted people as people. But we did have one experience where we were playing in the playground across the street from where we lived, and a white woman approached us and said something very derogatory to us and asked me what I was doing playing with a white boy. I didn't know what she was talking about because he was my brother. And so when I asked my mom about it, she says, he's not white, he's tan. And I said, oh, yeah, that makes sense. And I didn't really think anything more about it except for that was just a mean person, you know? It was just, every once in a while you run across mean people, and that was just a mean person.
Was that in Fort Scott, or was that outside of Fort Scott?
That was in Fort Scott.
Mm-hmm.
Because by that time, we had moved to a house that was directly across the street from the public elementary school.
What was it like going to school in Fort Scott?
I only went to school my kindergarten. I went to 2 years of pre-kindergarten because of my birthday being at the end of September, so I didn't qualify to go to kindergarten when I turned 6 because school started before I turned 6. So I had to wait until the next year when I was almost seven to go to kindergarten. And then I went to first grade. And then by time I was almost ready to go to second grade, we moved to Parsons. So I didn't have a lot of years of experience in school. But I had a really good friend that lived down the street from us. And we played together every day. And she would invite me to come over to her house after school. And I knew that I would have to leave her house at a particular time by the time her father got home, before her father got home from work, because the mother had told me, you know, the father was prejudiced. But the mother wasn't. So, you know, we had a great time. And as far as school was concerned, there was really no indication that people were treated differently according to their skin color at all. So I did not feel a tinge of prejudice from any of the teachers or, you know, school officials or anything like that.
So the scene where the teacher says, you know, basically the black children should aim for being porters. Mm-hmm. Like, don't try to go to college. You never experienced anything like that.
No. That would have been probably, you know, by the 50s, pretty snuffed out by the 50s.
Had any of your siblings experienced anything that you know of in school, or any more harsh prejudice?
My older siblings, like my sister is 21 years older than me, so she would not have even gone to school in Fort Scott. And I thought maybe one or two of the other ones didn't even go to school in Fort Scott. But as far as prejudice, I would say not. I have a picture of when my mom graduated from JUCO, my sister graduated from junior high, and my brother graduated from high school. And the Fort Scott Tribune wrote an article about us, well, about them, all graduating at the same time. And that, I think, kind of exemplifies the attitude. You know, they really celebrated success of black people, that they were doing something. As far as, you know, saying, oh, you can't be anything more than a porter, I don't think that was the prevailing attitude. My mother, like I said, had eight kids, so we were on welfare and we were very poor. And she said that one of the things that motivated her to go to back to school and get her degree was that her social worker had told her, you know, some things at one point in time that she thought was not kind. And I don't know exactly what it was, but my mother had responded to her, you know, I could have your job, I could do your job. And the woman challenged her back and said, well, why don't you go to school and get your degree, and then you won't be on welfare. So my mom said, okay. She did.
Are you sure you don't want to go inside?
Mm-hmm.
Do you want, like, do you have a coat that you would like me to bring in?
Oh,
okay, that's it.
I'm fine.
Okay. Just making sure.
When we went to Fort Scott in October, a couple of ladies mentioned that it seems like the black presence in Fort Scott is dwindling away more and more. Do you have any idea maybe why that could be?
The economy is really bad. Opportunities for jobs are pretty poor, which is typical of the smaller towns in Kansas all over. It's a community that used to be up towards maybe 10,000 at one point, and I think if you check, it's probably closer to maybe 6,000 or 7,000 now. There's just not a lot of opportunities. My sister had made the comment, it's kind of depressing, you know, to stay in a community like that where you don't have opportunities for jobs and growth.
I'd say that's probably true for all people of Fort Scott, not just the black community.
I think so. I would say so. There's not a lot to do. There's not a lot going on.
Why do you think that, so there's not a whole lot to commemorate Gordon Parks, other than when you drive in, there's one sign on the highway that says, welcome to Fort Scott, home of Gordon Parks, and then there's this little, not even a museum, but a room in one of the university's buildings that acts as, you know, as kind of a commemorative site for Gordon Parks. Why do you think that there isn't more in the way of honoring Gordon Parks? And we heard from the residents that there's actually been some opposition to doing that they said, oh, we already named a street after him, so that's enough.
My impression from the situation was that he had kind of turned his back on Fort Scott after he became more successful and was not really intending to do much more as far as even having an association with the town. I was surprised when he actually had... He's buried. There's a tombstone in Evergreen Cemetery. So I was actually surprised that when he died that he, you know, had his remains buried here, because my impression was that he had pretty much turned his back on the town. And that might have been due to some other things, that maybe people were jealous or things, and, you know, he felt maybe he was not embraced, which is, it happens a lot, you know? Your hometown doesn't embrace you or your success.
It seems like the family is definitely embracing Fort Scott more. I know his daughter, Toni, her ashes were spread at the cemetery in October, and then his Gordon's other son, David, he mentioned that he would also be buried in Fort Scott, so it seems like they've definitely changed their opinions on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think he had very many visits back to Fort Scott, though, after he finished the projects that he was working on. I think he was there maybe 1970, 71. My recollection was that he'd come to do something with the cast and crew that were in a TV series, Room 222, and he stayed there for something that they were working on, and I think he had something to do with the direction on it, as even a contributor or something to that effect. But after that, I don't remember any instances of people talking about him coming back to Fort Scott. So, anyway, I think that might be why there's not a lot of, you know, historical artifacts or, you know, a lot of celebration of them there.
It could also be if the city is impoverished, there might not just be any funds for it, too.
Could be. The little area that they have the artifacts in, I haven't seen, because like I said, when I tried to see it, it was a day that they weren't open, so at that point in time, I don't know if they were open just 2 days a week or something to that effect, but they weren't open on the weekend, which is really weird, but yeah. I was there on a weekend and I couldn't go see.
Yeah, I think they're bound by the college, since they're in the college, which is nice for them. They don't have to have their own standalone building and worry about upkeeping that, but then they're at the mercy of the college, which isn't too great either.
Yeah, so I mean, there's just not a lot going on. I don't go back to Fort Scott myself because there's nothing there to see, you know.
Do you have any family left in Fort Scott, or has everybody moved?
Everyone's moved. At one point in time, my mom said she was going to go back and live there, but I don't think she's ever even going to get buried there anymore, even though we had a cemetery plot there. She's probably not going to even be buried there anymore.
Was the cemetery plot that you initially had, was it... it seems like there, obviously, Fort Scott was segregated, so there's a section where black families are buried and then where white families are buried. Do you know if it was where typically the black families were, or?
I don't. My brother died about 5 or 6 years ago, and we ended up using it was actually two plots. I had a baby sister that died before I was born, and then my brother died about 5 or 6 years ago. And that's when I realized Gordon Parks is... headstone was there also. But I don't recall Evergreen being segregated like that. Evergreen Cemetery?
I heard that, I could be wrong, but I heard that maybe it was. I could have just heard wrong. Or
the plot where they're buried?
Yeah.
Yeah, so at one point in time there was, it was segregated with black families, and of course this is according to Gordon Parks and his writings, but the black, I guess those who would be buried who were black would be on one side and those who would be white were on the other side. And his mother was forced to be buried on the black side that wasn't kept very well. And that's one of the reasons why he was so upset at Fort Scott. And so he actually refused to be buried there until years later when the segregation ended and the attitudes changed enough for his liking.
Yeah, but he would have been talking about, what, the 1920s back then? I mean, a lot changed between the 1920s and the 1960s when I was born. So.
Speaking of that, Gordon's niece Robin mentioned to me that one of Gordon's biggest concerns up till the very last time she saw him was he was so concerned about how things would be for people who looked like him and were younger. But it seems like, from what you've said, that things were better. Would you say they're definitely better?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think Kansas as a state is a lot more progressive than even Oklahoma. And, you know, even when I moved to Parsons, I did not think of people in terms of color, which is, you know, kind of how, you know, he was raised. Think of people as people, good people, bad people.
Well, do you have any other questions you'd like to ask?
Do you have very many relatives that you were able to contact?
A couple. We have, we met Gordon's grandson, Alon, his niece, Robin.
His son, David.
We have their contact information. Then we met his other daughter, Leslie, I believe her name is. Don't believe we have any contact information of hers. I know I don't. Lives in Atlanta.
My sister told me today that one of her friends, Eileen Adams, claims to be related to Gordon Parks. I didn't know that, but she sent me her contact information if you'd like it.
Oh, yeah, we would love that.
And then, you know, if you want to just check and see what the relationship is as far as, you know, how she's related. Eileen would have been maybe late 50s, born in the late 50s, so she wouldn't be, you know, like a direct lineage, maybe a cousin or second cousin or something like that. But I can give you her contact information.
Yeah,
she might have some information for you as far as the family is concerned.
Yeah.
Okay.
Great. Do you have any other final words?
I'm sure you've already read his poetry, you've seen his photography and his other books. So at one point I, you know, did look at more of his works to get kind of a better feel of who he was. So I think it's cool. I mean, it just shows that, you know, if you work hard, you can make something of yourself.
Yeah. His life story, when you think about it, I think is incredible. If you think of this person who was born a stillborn and then fought their way for life, and then just after he, you know, was born and all the things he ended up accomplishing in life, it just, it's like, wow, this person was truly meant to be here.
Yep.
Well, thanks for sitting down with us.
You're welcome. And I'll go ahead and send you that information on Eileen.
All right.